Welcome to the Hot Lava Podcast. Kevin Acey, Padres beat writer for the Union Tribune. Ryan Finley, sports editor of the Union Tribune. I'm in Pittsburgh. Padres, Pirates coming up. Three games, start of a 9-game, 10-day road trip. Ryan, where would you like to start?
The Padres are back.
Maybe.
Coming off a 2-game sweep of the Giants, seemed to look an awful lot like they did the first couple weeks of the season when they were beating everybody. I think that was a huge 2-game midweek series. And now they head east for a pretty long road trip. Kevin, what were your observations from that sweep?
Yeah, as I agree with you. As late April series go, that was huge. They got two guys back, Luis Arraez in particular, but Jason Hayward had a really good series. I think Jason Hayward might be more important to this team than people maybe are thinking at this point. And they were playing the Giants, who had, at the start of the series, were tied or had the best record in the National League West. Mm-hmm. And they needed to break a 4-game losing streak on Tuesday, and then Wednesday kind of just like establish, okay, yeah, that wasn't just one game. I think that there is a lot, you know, we caution a lot about getting too far ahead of ourselves, assigning too much importance to things, but especially in this part of the season. I got to stop saying April because it's May now. But I absolutely agree with you. And now, like, I would be tongue-in-cheek if I said, oh, the Padres are back, as you were tongue-in-cheek when you said it at the start. But, I mean, I'm willing to say, like, the sentiment of that. Like, yes, I think that was really big.
Yep. Another person who may or may not be back, but, you know, at least he's hit a home run, is Xander Bogaerts. Kevin, you had a long story about him in today's Union Tribune. It was on our website yesterday.
It's still on the website, Ryan.
It is. Yeah. The tinkering that he does and the tinkering that he may have done to get back on track here, really interesting. You and I were talking yesterday during the editing process about kind of what an interesting guy he is. And, you know, he didn't exactly offer you all the details about the things that he's done, but it looks as if he's done something and he thinks it's working.
Yes. To summarize as what I know and to summarize it as succinctly as possible, Xander's a big feel guy. It's the hands in motion with the body going forward, but not too far forward. And look, he acknowledged, and other people have talked about, there's a confidence factor too. And a guy who has a lot of pride and has a lot of confidence, just first off, not starting the season well, but not starting another season well. In his third season, knowing how important he is to the team, there's just a lot going on with Xander now. Those were two really good days. Now, he kind of liked his swing earlier in the season. Here's what I've come to know over 3 years with Xander, as I have sort of quizzed him and watched him and talked to other people about him. The guy is always working, just tinker, tinker, tinker. He finished 2023 strong and went to a private facility that he doesn't want named because he really liked the guys. But he started doing what they asked, and he was hitting like 220 before, May 20th in Atlanta when he fractured in his left shoulder, the bone. And then he stopped during that time. When he got back to swinging the bat, he went back to what he, you know, was comfortable with, and or maybe something new. Who knows with Xander? And then he finished last season really strong. Guy is just always tinkering. What he and others have said is going back to the mindset and some of the mechanical things that made him, and I think people lose sight of this, not that it matters now, really, except it's mind-blowing to me in some ways. One of the best 40 hitters in baseball, undoubtedly, for 8 years in Boston, is now this guy for the Padres. That's incredible.
Right. The best player on a pretty good team for a very long time, Xander Bogaerts, is now struggling with the Padres. One of the things that interested me in that story, Kevin, was you talking to Victor Rodriguez. Now, Victor Rodriguez and Xander Bogaerts have a long history. Rodriguez was a minor league coach for the Red Sox when Bogaerts turned pro, and then was, the assistant hitting coach, right, with the Red Sox for a while with Bogaerts there. And Rodriguez said something along the lines of, I don't think you've seen how good he can be, right?
Yeah.
He remembered Xander Bogaerts at the height of his powers. This might be a tough question to answer in May, but, you know, what are they hoping they can get out of him in terms of percentage of vintage Xander Bogaerts? To get him back to 80%, is that good enough? Do they just want to get some value out of him at this point? What's the deal?
I think it's a little too much money to say they want some value. I think it's an interesting question. You said 80%. Here's what I'll say. If they get 80% of what Xander was from 2015 to 22, at the end of it, they'll say that was a really good season by Xander. Is that what they're hoping for now? No. I still believe they're hoping for everything that Xander Bogaerts was, and that they believe he can be close to that. Because it is remarkable. He's 32 years old. He's not 35 yet. He's 32 years old. And there's been this drop off and this inconsistency. So I think that they still are hoping that he is that guy. And there is a measure, a large measure of belief that he is that guy. I made the distinction in there. When they talk about him, it is not as if, oh, well, yeah, he was a good player. He is a good player. I believe they believe that.
Right. And that's not praise that they give to just anybody, right? I mean, the Padres parted ways with Yuli Gurriel earlier this week. And I guess this is how we transition into the next topic. You know, Yuli Gurriel, they talked about what a good player he was for a very long time in the major leagues, right? And then they cut him. That they believe Xander Bogaerts can still be that guy. I think says something. You know, again, I don't think that these guys are overly complimentary of players unless, you know, it's merited.
I would say this. Sometimes it feels like they don't protest too much, especially Mike Schilt. And I would say this, while I know where you're going with the Yuli Gurriel thing, like, here's the difference. They could be fooling themselves or simply doing a good sell job, not fooling themselves, but doing a good sell job, because they have to have Xander Bogaerts. They can't just release Xander Bogaerts. 200 and counting this year, and obviously some of it's been paid down, but counting this year, $225 million left on that contract. So, like, it's almost like they have to, right? Like, you're married to someone, and let's say by law, right, or some conviction of yours, you can't get divorced. Right? You are going to convince yourself that that person is the greatest spouse, right? That person is, and let's say they're not being, like, you're going to convince that person's going to change. Like, you are going to do some amazing mental gymnastics, if you're smart, to get yourself to believe that. Now, I'm not saying that's all that's happening here, but the fact is they have to have Xander. And I have talked before about, I believe I've written it, that this is a huge year in the eyes of many in the organization in terms of how do we start to think of Xander Bogaerts long-term. If we're talking about three significantly subpar years, and 2023 was okay, but it would have only been his, I believe, seventh or sixth best season in Boston. But if we're talking about three subpar years, what do we do going forward? Do we start to consider eating some of the contract and packaging it with prospects? Like, what? Now, I'm getting ahead, but understand this. If the Padres were to tell you they haven't thought of that, then they're lying or they should be fired, those people, because that's what executives are paid to do. So, like, this is a big year for Xander Bogaerts.
I think of somebody like Miguel Cabrera, and I know that they're completely different situations. But, you know, Miguel Cabrera went from, he was a third baseman in the major leagues, and then he was a left fielder, then he was a first baseman, and then the hitting really started to drop, and he was a part-time DH, and then he was just on the bench for a long time. Then they kept him around to get his 3,000th hit. Like, you know, I think that that's sort of everybody's nightmare scenario here, right, is that Xander Bogaerts becomes so bad that you can't play him, but too expensive to give, and so expensive that you can't trade him. Right.
Right. And that it happened sooner than you thought. Look, when you signed Xander, to some extent, when you signed Manny Machado to that contract, when the Yankees signed Aaron Judge, when the Phillies signed Trey Turner to these contracts that are taking them to 40, there was an acknowledgement that there's going to be a Pujols effect here. That the, you know, and I'm not talking about Pujols who came back and found the fountain of youth for a season with the Cardinals. I'm talking about the guy that signed that huge contract for the Angels and was, you know, not. Didn't help lead him to the promised land, which I would argue, if Xander Bogaerts in 2000, let's say that doesn't, the Padres don't win the World Series this year, don't win it next year, don't win it 27. If Xander Bogaerts in 2028 has the year of his career and helps the Padres to the World Series, contract worth it. That's sure. what I would argue. But your sure. your nightmare scenario is that it was never worth it. Yes.
Right. It was never worth it in that you're either giving him a roster spot out of an obligation or you're just paying him to not play for you, right? the Eric Hosmer situation.
And there, like I said, I got the impression, not the impression, basically flat out told by people around the league, that that was the winter of 22, I believe. So, but right when Xander signed, Trey Turner, Aaron Judge, these teams knew they're either going to be cutting this guy and paying, you know, not Xander, but like, you know, various stars that are signed and, you know, paying them $80 million in retirement or, you know, be trading them and packaging, you know, it's just like, you know, good money, bad money, whatever. But like you're banking on the first three quarters or more of the contract being like being worth it. So you're basically, you're then saying, okay, we're paying Xander Bogaerts $32 million a year, basically, because those last few years. But right now they're paying him $25 million a year to, you know, not be Xander Bogaerts.
Right. And that number is interesting too, Kevin. You know, like the conversations I have, you know, at the Little League fields with the other dads or whatever it is everybody talks about they're paying Xander Bogaerts $25 million a year and he stinks, you know, is what others say. Not you know, I think he's a serviceable big league shortstop and a serviceable six hitter. Yeah. But that's yeah. $12 million a year.
Right? There you go. 12, 13, 15. People do need to remember. Don't start comparing it to Tyler Wade money or something, right?
Right, right.
Like there is a cost in this business. But yes.
And I think that, and it's not, I mean, hey, if somebody offered me that, a fraction of that amount of money, I'd take it. In a way, it's a little unfair because, you know, Xander Bogaerts didn't come up with the terms of that deal. That it's the Padres. And, you know, I think that fair or not, that salary figure is going to be the thing that looms over him throughout the course of this contract. You know, he's not just Xander Bogaerts big leaguer. He's Xander Bogaerts $25 million a year for the next 8 years or whatever.
And I know, I think what you're saying, and I agree, is he gets judged on a different level because of his income bracket.
Yep.
And we can't think of a better word than unfair because it's not unfair. Like right. He accepted the contract and he, you know, lives in Aruba and Coronado. So, okay. Right. And he plays big league ball for, you know, for a living. Right. Right. Maybe we should be in a bit different business because we can't think of another word besides unfair because it's definitely not unfair, but it is. There's not a lot of apples to apples here.
Sure. There's not. And I think fortunately for the Padres, there's not a lot of experience in sort of this kind of a signing. You know, I guess Eric Hosmer is the one that jumps out, right? But Eric right. Hosmer wasn't making anywhere near what Xander Bogaerts is making. And, you know, not to get in the way back machine here, but Eric Hosmer was sort of the first, right? And so I think right. that maybe yeah. judge him on a curve a little.
Yeah, and there was something they were trying to accomplish in that moment, right? You could argue there was something they were trying to accomplish in this moment. They went for Aaron Judge, you know, probably had no chance, but they made a good faith effort on Aaron Judge. Peter Seidler, you know, I've written it before, I've talked about it before. He was the impetus behind this signing. He got it done. And they were, you know, they were going for it. They needed some more star power and a player that was going to, you know, contribute to at the time had Juan Soto, Tatis coming back, that sort of thing. And here's the deal. People talk about, I think it was $70, $80 million more than what the Red Sox were offering him. Yes, though less money per year. So what the Padres did is what the Yankees did, what the Phillies did. You're paying a guy, again, we've talked about this, that on the back end, it's thrown away money, basically, unless somehow the guy legally finds, you know, a way around, you know, the fountain of youth. They paid him less per year for more years. So, you know, the Padres, look, a lot of people said it at the time that they overpaid. Every team's different in terms of what you're trying to accomplish. And if Xander Bogaerts was 90% of what Xander Bogaerts had been in Boston, there would be some people saying, wait, what the Padres were trying to accomplish would have been accomplished if Xander Bogaerts were competing at that level. or producing at that level. I don't want to question his compete. I don't think anyone does that. It produces.
Right. And, you know, one of my takeaways from your story today is, man, he cares. You know, this is a guy who I'm sure nobody is bothered more by this than he is.
It's funny that I remember there was at least one other story I wrote. This was in 2023 when he was struggling. I remember being in San Francisco at that time and having a couple long conversations with him and then writing. And when I see some of the reactions to these stories, it's like that people are relieved that he cared. Mm. To me, the assumption by you then was really the issue. I'm not saying that's the, what you thought the problem with Xander was, but when you say, oh, and it's good to know he at least cares. Why would you think he did it? Does that mean that if someone paid you more than you were worth, you'd stop caring? You know, the idea that Xander would not care is, you know, I just don't think that's right or fair or anything.
Right, but he seems genuinely.
Yes.
I mean, tortured. I'm not going to use the word tortured. He makes a lot of money to play baseball, but you know, this seems to be gnawing at him. It seems to be gnawing at him. And,
I've been doing this 30 years and I'm very, very, I was not defensive of them, but I stick up for these guys a lot when the regular Joe, right? The guys you and I hang out with, right? Even some really rich people I know that maybe got their money in business, right? By going to school the old fashioned way. Who was that guy? John Houseman? Earned my money the old fashioned way. I earned it. Well, these guys earned it too. And I'm always defending them, right? But the fact is, that's a lot of money to play baseball, buddy. So No one should feel sorry for any of them.
For any of them. Oh, that's a great point. Speaking of Padres and millionaires and people off the injured list, this is a club that seems to be getting healthier by the day. Luis Arraez is back. Jason Hayward's back. Then made what could have been a game-saving catch on Wednesday. You mentioned early in the show here that you think he might be a bigger part of what they're trying to do than some fans might believe. Let's talk about that for a minute. You know, he seems to be figuring it out a little.
Yeah, I want to say this, that we'll see, right? Like he wasn't, by the way, I was pretty much spot on how long Yuli Gurriel was going to last on this team. Not that I hoped it or necessarily said he would be gone, but I very emphatically said, this is about the time period that, you know, I expect. And I don't put Jason Hayward in that category, but we'll see. But he takes good at bats. That's for real. That's for real. Now, that's also the phrase that a lot of people use when a guy is, you know, on his way out of the league for good, because that's what people said about Yuli Gurriel. but they're good at bats. He is finding a way to get on base. He is useful. He can still play I'll admit, surprisingly good defense in a spot that hasn't played a whole bunch, the left side, and is an incredible teammate. And everyone unsolicited. I talk to a lot of people, and I'm a very cynical person because you can't help about it in this business. People are always telling you stuff, right? Well, unsolicited and just kind of as asides, the amount of people that talk about the tips, the encouragement that Jason Hayward gives to his teammates in the middle of games, the experience that he passes on to a Gavin Sheets, to a Tyler Wade. It's just remarkable. It's remarkable. And it seems to make it real that this is the kind of guy that the Padres have sort of dotted their roster with, that are contributing in ways that they find valuable.
Right. And so long as he only plays against righties and hits seventh, right? As long as they're not asking him to do something that's unreasonable, I think he's a really good part of this team. The question to me becomes, you know, if Xander Bogaerts continues to slump, if Gavin Sheets comes back to earth, are you going to need a left fielder who produces more than Jason Hayward does? And will they have a little money at the trade deadline to go get somebody?
Yeah, I think they have a little money at the trade deadline. We'll see. But that's my understanding is that they're what to me, someone asked me this yesterday. And I think that the big thing more than that is the Padres need health. All right. There might be some ways they can improve in a couple months at the trade deadline, but you can't have, as you just pointed out, Jason Hayward moving up to fifth in the lineup. Okay. That would make the Padres the Pirates, because we'll talk about it in a little bit. There's a remarkable number of accomplished big leaguers on the Pirates and they suck. So mm-hmm. not the players themselves, the team's record is terrible and they just can't, they've got good pitching and can't win. That's because they're dotted with guys that are Jason Hayward. And Jason mm-hmm. Hayward might not be as good as his numbers are or can be because he's surrounded by players on the Padres, and that's just the way it is. So yes, absolutely. Jason Hayward is the kind of player, and the Dodgers have done this for years. You have your core, and as long as they stay healthy, you can have Jason Hayward starting 70, 80% of your games in left field.
Right. 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 As long as your superstars play like superstars, Jason Hayward can play. Is Tyler Wade never going back to El Paso? I mean,
I don't believe so. I believe that. I wrote in the newsletter the other day, he's earned his spot on this team. They love him. It was a circumstance situation. We've talked about a lot of him going to El Paso. Once he decided to stay, it was like once he comes up and if he's, you know, a contributor, which he's been more than one, all of his off the field stuff, in addition to he's a very Jason Hayward kind of guy, not at the level, obviously, of career accomplishment, but a really smart guy, a real, I don't want to say rah-rah, that diminishes, but he's a, you know, he's an encourager. And again, I want to repeat how smart he is and how much he helps this team. And he, by the way, in 13 starts, has a 419 on base percentage. Can't ask right. for more from what Tyler Wade is doing. By the way, of the six positions he's played in the major league, center field was one of the least. And here he is playing it a dozen games and, you know, doing it pretty well. He's about to lose that job, but, you know, go back to being the Tyler Wade who fills in every once in a while, who pinch runs, who's there to lay down a sacrifice bunt, get a spot start at one of five positions. That's where he'll be back, but could not ask more of Tyler Wade.
Right, right. And if you haven't read it yet, go to our website. Annie Heilbrun has a great Q&A with Tyler Wade talking about sort of how he learned the game in the Yankees clubhouse. How rookies were sort of seen and not heard and sort of how things have changed. Really cool stuff from Annie there about Tyler. Kevin, that gets us to injuries. Just real quick here, how long before we see Jackson Merrill?
Monday in New York is my understanding. Maybe Brandon Lockwood, Lockridge. I have no idea why. Do you understand? I don't think it's made print. 90% of the time when I have, and I love Brandon Lockridge and have talked to him probably more than anyone that's not on the team. I just love this guy and he's smart and all that. That's why I've talked to him. I know his name is Brandon Lockridge. The amount of times I have typed Brandon Lockwood, have you had those in your career where there's just a mental block? And then every time he's in a story, at the end of the story, I have to go back. I control F Lockwood to see how many times I have put his. It's insane. Anyway, Brandon Lockridge, he probably will be back here against Pittsburgh. He's and they're facing two lefties, by the way, Saturday and Sunday. So he could be the starter in left field. And then Jake Cronenworth probably in Colorado if things continue to progress as they are.
Right. And Yu Darvish may not be that far off.
Right. End of May, maybe 3 weeks, I would think, based on the timeline of in the next couple days throwing to hitters, probably throwing to hitters again beginning of the week. And then, probably a rehab start after that, or maybe another time to hitters. And then for two rehab starts, he has thrown near full intensity, the equivalent of two innings in the bullpen. So the thing is, you want to get him built up. I think it would be ideal to them. Not that this is a end all by any means. They're still going slow with you. They faced the Dodgers seven times in 11 days. I think it's June 6th or 7th through like the 15th that wouldn't be 11 days. Another strong suit, not math. But anyway, middle of June, seven times 11 days. If you got a start or two in before the Dodgers series and you're able to face the Dodgers once or twice, I think they'd like that.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, one of the advantages or one of the side effects, one of the benefits, that's the word, of starting as hot as they've started, there's not a need to press these guys back into action. Their season doesn't hang in the balance on May 2nd, right? If Darvish has to sit until mid-June, and if they're about where they are right now in the standings, you take it, right? If you have to float left field until the trade deadline in order to get some real value out of a left fielder acquisition, they're playing well enough that you can do that, right? It's, again, things are so much easier when you're winning as a franchise. A franchise that does not do much winning, the Pittsburgh Pirates, Padres starting a three-game series with them this afternoon, San Diego time, 3:40. Kevin, let's talk about these Pirates. They have the most interesting man in baseball in Tyler Skene. Paul Skeens.
I did it to you. It's me. It's my fault.
Dang. And Paul Skeens. Of course, the Padres won't face him because the Padres never face him. instead, you're getting sort of an interesting mix of young and old. Is that a polite way to put it?
Sure. You got Mitch Keller, right-hander today, going against Dylan Cease. The Padres have not announced their starters, as far as I know. But Bailey Falter, Randy Vasquez tomorrow, and Andrew Haney, very familiar to the Padres in recent years, against Nick Pivetta on Sunday. I suppose since they're going to need that fifth starter in New York, they could bring Kyle Hart back sooner, but I don't see why they would do that. So I don't think you see that fifth starter till New York. Tuesday, I believe, is when he would have to slot in. So I think it's going to be, well, I know it's going to be Cease tonight and then Vasquez and Pivetta tomorrow. But to me, the interesting one is Andrew Haney, a journeyman who has owned the Padres, like a 1.01 ERA in four starts against them.
Wow.
So to me, this series, Ryan, is like to you, if I was going to nail it down, if you said, what's been the defining series, which no one's ever asked me, what has been the defining season series for the Padres? Well, in my estimation, their series is against the Pirates the past two seasons. 2023, missed the playoffs by two games. Highly disappointing. The Pirates sucked. I think they've been 20 games under at the end of both of the last two seasons. So the Pirates have essentially been the same team. The Padres went 1-5 against them in 2023. Got swept here. I believe it was June. Terrible fires up in Canada. Almost didn't play the game, the final game. 1-5. 2024, Padres taking care of business against bad teams. Padres 93 wins, cruising number one wild card spot. I think I'm right about that. 6-0 against the Pirates. This is a defining series potential. So far this year, the Padres are 7-3 against losing teams. They're taking care of business against teams with losing records. So I do think it's an important early May series to come in here and win this series and potentially, heck, sweep them because, you know, that's what you do. And you also aren't facing Skeens. Not saying, though, look, each one of these pitchers, now the Padres, I think, was it Falter last year? They did real well against each one of these pitchers for the these are no slouches. The Pirates built their team this year around has-beens but quality pitching.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right. It's so funny looking at their daily lineup here. I mean, O'Neill Cruz is a guy who I would pay real money to see.
Did you know O'Neill Cruz was in the same draft class as Vladimir Guerrero, Juan Soto, and Fernando Tatis Jr.? The Dodgers took him for $1.2
million. Right, and they traded him for a reliever. Was it Tony Watson? Something like that?
I think it was. But anyway, O'Neill Cruz has three balls in play at 118 miles an hour or harder. The only other person is Vladimir Guerrero has done it twice. This guy can hit.
Right.
Well, he can hit hard.
You have Andrew McCutchen in his, late 30s, early 40s. Joey Bart, remember him?
Who's doing pretty well.
Isaiah Kiner-Falefa.
Yep.
Veteran. Played some places. And then, of course, the veteran's veteran, the king of all veterans, Tommy Pham.
Tommy Pham, Brian Reynolds, Adam Frazier. Like, this is like the 2015 Padres, almost.
Almost. Almost. It's... I don't know what they're doing as a franchise, Kevin, but I know that they have one great young pitcher, one super compelling young player. I'm not sure if O'Neill Cruz is great, but he's fun as heck to watch. Really weird franchise top to bottom.
Yeah, I can't say that I've studied them. You see and hear different things. They've manipulated some playing time. They've got another couple prospects down there. One could be up now. Yeah, they don't seem terrible. I always hate to say this because I like to just be the guy who talks about what I know about. Don't seem all that committed to going for it, right? Like, I would argue they had some good young players in the past, and I'm not saying you can't win with this pitching and this team. I mean, Tommy Pham's batting like 170 or something, right? Like, if Tommy Pham was doing what he's done the past few years, if Brian Reynolds, Adam Frazier, like, I'm not saying you can't win with this team, but, like, you know, this is a lightning in a bottle team.
Yes. No, it is. It is a lightning in a bottle team. And yeah, I mean, you know, somebody like Key Brian Hayes, right? It's
Yeah.
If he was brought along slowly in the big leagues with a team that was winning, maybe you'd get a different result than what we've seen from him. You know, he's almost really not even a young player anymore. It's very interesting. Very interesting. All right, Kevin. Well, before we go, you know, I always put you on the spot. But then tell me about Pittsburgh today. I know it's one of your favorite places. You get Pittsburgh and Yankee Stadium back to back, and my guess is you're more excited about Pittsburgh.
Yeah, because new Yankee Stadium is nothing special. You're in the Bronx. There is a feeling there, right? There's still the subway going by, the four on the out beyond the fence. It's still, you know, it's still neat, but it's not old Yankee Stadium, right?
Right.
This city is beautiful. I'm an evangelist for Pittsburgh. The view from the ballpark, the ballpark's pretty basic. It's not Petco Park, but the view is amazing. And there's views all over this city. The rock structures, the green, the kind of green you only get in Pennsylvania and maybe the South some places because of the rain. It could rain every day here, by the way. I just absolutely love it. And anybody who's spent time here, you know, a significant amount of time, well, loves it. Maybe they didn't love it like because the weather in the winter and the rain and whatever. It is a beautiful city, good people. Love Pittsburgh. Love it.
Food's good. People are nice. To me, it seems European in a way, you know, right? You're there on a river.
It's old school East Coast, right?
Yep. Yep.
Even though it's Western Pennsylvania, it's old school is what it is. There's limestone and I'm just telling you, get to Pittsburgh. I don't know what you would do besides walk around and go, hey, this is a neat little city. I'm not a tourist. I don't know. But I love coming here. And the ballpark, get it on your list. Get it on your list of ballparks.
Yep. People I know who've been to every stadium always rank Pittsburgh near the top. Kevin, is it in your top five? Top five? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, well, you go Wrigley because it's Wrigley. You go Fenway. And then I probably will put this there. But I'm not even partial to Petco because I try not to be like this homer. And I think that number one ballpark rankings and all this, like you go to Arizona and they thank them for being the best fans in baseball. Like all that stuff is garbage, right? But I probably end up pushing back on it. I don't give Petco enough credit. Petco is fantastic. It's definitely top five as well.
Yep, absolutely. Padres Pirates 3-game series starting tonight. Well, this afternoon, San Diego time from Pittsburgh. That'll do it for this episode of the Hot Lava Podcast. Kevin, you sound great. I'm glad to have you sort of back. Tell me you feel as good as you sound.
Yeah, I must say, I texted my son today. He asked. I don't know why he's getting older. They start to actually become adults at some point, Ryan. So you there's a light at the end of the tunnel. I gave myself about 90%, but, you know, I gave him the old line. You know, after the first week of spring training, you know, no one's 100%. So, and especially pushing 55. So.
For Kevin Acey, I'm Ryan Finley. We'll see you next time.